Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 89.
These ironsmiths, they've worked all night, probably exhausted.
Oh, definitely. And they wake up to find the weapon, the disciples' weapons, mind you, just gone from under the forge shed.
Total nightmare scenario. You can just feel the panic, right?
Oh, yeah. It's instant terror. But also, like, complete helplessness. These aren't ordinary swords or anything.
Right.
They're magical, incredibly heavy. So the blacksmiths, they're not just saying, we didn't do it. They're crying, they're swearing, they're just mortals. They couldn't possibly move these things.
Begging for their lives, basically.
Yeah, exactly. They're terrified. They'll be blamed for something impossible.
And then, boom, Pigsy. Predictable, maybe? He just leaps in.
Classic Pigsy. Straight away, where's my rake? And then accusing the blacksmiths, threatening them.
Threatening to beat them to death. It really tells you a lot about him in a crisis, doesn't it? How he reacts first, thinks later.
It absolutely does. Impulsive, angry, looking for the easy target. It's very him. But that outburst, it actually serves a purpose.
How so?
Because it brings in the old prince, the Yuhua King. He hears the commotion, comes out, clearly upset by the news, but he defends his people.
Okay, so he steps in.
Yeah. He talks about how peaceful the city is, his own virtuous reputation, how his people fear the law too much for such a crazy theft.
And he makes a practical point too, right?
Yeah.
About the weight.
Crucial point. He says, you know, even 100 or more people couldn't lift these things. It changes the whole perspective. This isn't just some local thieves.
Which leads us straight to the Monkey King. Because while Pigsy's still fuming,
Monkey King's already moved past that. He immediately dismisses the idea of the blacksmiths being the culprits.
What does that quick thinking tell us about him? Especially with, like, weird supernatural stuff.
It shows his scale, right? He understands these aren't normal items, so it's probably not a normal thief. He gets the supernatural dimension instantly.
He doesn't waste time on the impossible human explanation.
Exactly. He suspects the weapons, because they're magical, probably glowed.
Ah, like a beacon.
Yeah, a beacon that alerted some, the text calls them a scoundrel or evil person, a Dayren, someone who operates on a different level.
So his mind immediately goes to who could do this, not who did do this among the humans.
Precisely. It's a key insight. And then the old prince adds another piece.
Right, the geography. That's vital.
It's super important. He mentions, okay, north of the city, about 70 lies. What's that, maybe 20-odd miles?
Something like that.
There's Leopard Head Mountain, and on it, Tiger Mouth Cave.
And there are rumors about this place.
Yeah, local legends. Maybe immortals live there, or maybe, and this is the key part, tiger wolves or yaoguai, demons, monsters.
Okay, so potential suspects identified, not human ones.
And that's all Monkey King needs to hear. He's like, right, it's definitely a scoundrel from that mountain.
Just connects the dots.
Instantly, instantly. So plan forms. He tells Pigsy and Shaw Monk, you guys stay here. Guard the master, guard the city.
Keep things stable here.
Right. And he tells the blacksmiths, keep working. Don't let this stop everything. Then poof, he's off, alone.
And he gets there fast, right? 70 lines in an instant.
Like blinking. It shows his power, but also his focus. He knows where he needs to be.
And what's the mountain like when he arrives?
It's described as beautiful, actually. Majestic peaks, deep valleys, lots of plants, animals.
Sounds quite nice.
Visually, yes. But Monkey King, he senses something else underneath all that.
The demonic aura.
Exactly. That Yao Ki. The beauty is just skin deep. There's something wrong there, and he feels it right away.
And it doesn't take him long to find something, does it?
Nope. He quickly hears voices coming from behind the mountain somewhere. Two figures walking northwest.
And they're not human.
Definitely not. The text calls them wolf-headed demon guards, Lang Tu Guayao.
Wolf-headed guards. Okay. So he needs to get closer, figure out what they know. How does he do that without being seen?
This is classic Monkey King intel gathering. He needs stealth. So he transforms.
Into what?
A tiny butterfly. Who die here?
A butterfly?
Yeah.
Seriously?
And the description's great. Powder wings, silver whiskers. It talks about how it flies, like, really gracefully, swiftly with the wind, dancing slowly in the sun.
Wow. So he becomes this delicate little thing.
And just flutters right over their heads, completely invisible to them. Perfect surveillance.
Genius.
Yeah.
And what does he hear? What's the intel?
It's gold. First, he hears them talking about their great king. Apparently, he's had some good luck recently. Got a beautiful woman last month.
Okay. Interesting side note. But the weapons.
That's the main thing. They confirm it. Their king got the three priceless weapons just last night.
Confirmation. They took them.
Absolutely. And they even reveal why. They're planning a party to celebrate.
A party?
Yep. a nail rake feast. Ding pa hui. Plan for the very next morning.
A nail rake feast.
Yeah.
Specifically named after Pigsy's weapon.
Seems like it. It tells Monkey King the motive celebration, maybe showing off the loot and the timing. Critical intel.
That is crucial. Anything else?
Yeah, and this part's kind of funny. It adds a touch of, like, mundane evil.
Go on.
They're discussing their budget. They were given 20 taels of silver to buy supplies at Qin Feng Market, they mentioned, for the feast.
Okay.
And they're plotting to skim off, like, 2 or 3 taels.
Embezzling from the Demon King. Why?
To buy warm clothes for themselves. Even demon guards worry about the cold, apparently.
Slight chuckle. Okay, wow. So they're stealing epic magical weapons, but also plotting petty cash fraud for winter wear. That's oddly relatable.
Isn't it? It makes them feel a bit more, well, real, despite being wolf-headed demons.
Yeah.
Adds a layer to it.
Definitely. So Monkey King has all this info, but he doesn't have his own weapon right now, does he? How does he handle these two guards? He can't just fight them head-on unarmed.
Right, good point. He realizes he needs to neutralize them quickly and quietly, not get into a big brawl. So no weapon, no problem. He improvises.
What does he do?
He flies ahead of them, changes back to his real form, and basically sets up an ambush by the roadside.
Okay, so he's waiting for them.
Yeah. And as they come along, he uses a spell. The fixing spell, Ding Shenfa.
Fixing spell, like, freezes them.
Exactly, just like that. A puff of magical breath, an incantation, and boom, they're stuck, rooted to the spot. Can't move, can't speak.
Wow. Efficient.
Very. Then he searches them.
And he finds.
The 20 taels of silver they were just talking about pocketing? Oh. Proof. Kind of. And he finds their name tags. Like little ID badges.
What do they say?
One says Diao Zuan Guguai, and the other Guguai Diao Zuan. Could they basically mean the same thing? Something like crafty old monster and old monster crafty. Funny names.
Chuckles. Okay. So he gets the silver, gets their IDs.
Confirms who they are, grabs the proof, the money, the tags, all the intelligence he needs. Mission accomplished, basically.
So he doesn't need to, like, interrogate them further. The spell is enough.
He got what he needed from overhearing them. The spell just lets him neutralize them and grab the physical evidence without a fight. So, yeah. He turns right around and heads straight back to the city.
To Yuhua's palace.
Monkey King, Wukong... he gets this. He's the strategist, right?
Always.
So he cooks up this amazing plan to get it back. The target is the Demon's Lair Tiger Mouth Cave. And the really clever part, he uses something he already did.
Okay. What's that?
Remember, he'd already used this ding-ding spell. It's like a freezing or stunning spell on one of the lesser demons, Diao Zuan Guguai.
Right. Right.
And this spell is timed, so the demon won't wake up till the next day. It's the perfect opportunity, this little window they have.
Oh, okay. So he created an opening.
Huh.
How does he actually plan to use that? How do they get in there and grab the rake? Especially when, you know, demons might be expecting trouble.
Well, it's deception layered on deception. It's quite brilliant, really. The core is disguises. Pigsy transforms into the very demon Wukong knocked out Diao Zuan Guguai.
Okay, that makes sense. Use the guy who's supposed to be there.
Exactly. And Wukong, he becomes Guguai Diao Zuan. See the name? It's just reversed. So they look like a pair, like they belong together.
Well, that's clever. Subtle.
Mm-hmm. And Sandy, good old reliable Sandy, he gets the role of just a humble guy selling pigs and sheep. It seems normal enough, someone who might be bringing supplies or, you know, tribute to a demon cave.
Right. Fits the scene. And you mentioned practical details. They didn't just magic up the animals?
No, no. And that's what makes it feel grounded almost. They had silver, presumably for buying supplies, maybe animals. They redirect that silver to the palace craftsmen instead. Quick thinking.
Okay. So how'd they get the animals?
Prince Yuhua, the Yuhua king, steps in. He arranges for the actual pigs and sheep. The text says 7 or 8 pigs, 4 or 5 sheep. It's a proper little logistical operation they've got going.
Huh. You can just picture them counting pigs.
Yeah.
So Wukong pitches this whole complex thing. How do Pigsy and Sandy react? Are they like, whoa, slow down? Or are they ready to go?
Oh, they're totally on board instantly. The source says Pigsy was like immediately excited. And Sandy's just excellent, excellent, excellent. No delay. Let's go.
Yeah.
You really feel their energy, their trust in Wukong's plan.
That says a lot about their dynamic, doesn't it?
It really does. Unity, trust.
So the transformation itself, is he just a poof of smoke or...
It's described quite specifically, actually. Wukong gives Pigsy detailed instructions first. Then he does this thing where he blows a breath of immortal, this sort of divine energy into him that makes the transformation perfect, seamless.
Wow.
And get this detail, both of them, Wukong and Pigsy in disguise, wear a pink-white placard at their waist.
A placard? Like a name tag?
Sort of, yeah. It's like an identifier. It signals who they're supposed to be within that specific demon group, helps them blend right in. It's not just looking the part, it's having the right credentials almost.
Okay, so they're disguised, they've got their props, their placards, they're heading off. But this is Journey to the West, so I'm guessing the path isn't exactly clear.
You guess correctly. Nothing's ever straightforward. Completely out of the blue, they bump into another small demon just hanging out in this mountain hollow.
Oh boy. Another complication.
And the description of this guy is something else. Really vivid. Let me see. Round, bright eyes like lamps. Fiery red hair, all windblown.
Okay.
Snotty nose, crooked mouth, sharp fangs, big ears, a chopped forehead, whatever that means. Sounds nasty. And this greenish, swollen face.
Yikes. Not friendly looking.
Not at all. He's wearing light yellow clothes, straw sandals, but his whole vibe is just fierce, like a god of destruction or an evil spirit, the text says. Instantly signals danger.
Okay, so this fearsome little guy appears. Is he carrying anything? Does he say anything?
Yeah, he's got something interesting. Tucked under his left arm, there's this colorful, lacquered invitation box.
An invitation box, huh?
Right. Immediately catches Wukong's eye. It suggests something's up, some kind of event. And the demon confirms it. He says he's heading to Bamboo Joint Mountain to invite the old great king to a gathering scheduled for the very next morning. So clearly this isn't just a casual get together.
Okay. Wukong must be thinking, I need to see what's in that box. He's the master of tricky plans. How did he manage it without alerting this demon?
Classic Wukong. Mixes cleverness with a bit of performance. He asks to see the invitation, seems curious. But then he uses Pigsy's sudden pretend panic about the sheep and pigs scattering as a diversion.
Ah, the old look over there trick, but with panicked pigs.
Pretty much. While the demon's distracted by the chaos, Wukong snatches a look inside the box.
As you say, what's this big demon gathering all about?
This is the kicker. This is where it all clicks into place. The invitation reveals everything. The host is this demon called Yellow Lion.
Yellow Lion, okay.
And he's writing very humbly, calling himself your humble subordinate or even grandson, the guest of honor, this really grand-sounding figure, ancestor, nine-spirited, primal sage, old great elder, clearly a big shot in the demon world.
Wow, sounds important. But what are they gathering for?
That's the unbelievable part. The invitation states the purpose is to, now get this, respectfully prepare food and drink to celebrate the auspicious nail rake gathering.
No? The nail rake gathering?
Yes. They are literally throwing a party, a formal celebration, for Pigsy's stolen weapon with a fancy name and everything.
It is audacious. Insulting. What does it even say about these demons? Are they just incredibly arrogant?
It definitely speaks volumes about their pride, maybe, how they revel in what they've taken. It's like adding insult to injury.
So how do our heroes react when they find this out? Sandy?
Sandy, he's the analytical one, right? He immediately starts wondering, is Yellow Lion a golden-maned lion spirit? And he's trying to figure out who this nine-spirited primal sage really is. He's processing the power structure.
Right, trying to understand the players involved. And Pigsy, his treasure, is the guest of honor at a demon party. What's his take?
Oh, Pigsy. It's pure Pigsy. Vanity just flares right up. He immediately puffs up and boasts, it's old Pig's treasure.
Huh. Of course he does. And then he justifies it with this this old saying, a scabby sow specially chases after golden-maned lions. It's hilarious. Adds that perfect character touch. Even furious, his pride about his rake shines through. It really shows how much that weapon means to his identity. Okay, so they know the score now. They finally reach the place. Tiger Mouth Cave. And you'd picture a demon lair. Dark, scary skulls, maybe?
You'd think so. But the description we get is, well, it's the complete opposite. It's one of the most surprising bits in this whole section.
How so?
The cave entrance is described as stunningly beautiful, serene even. It's surrounded by green mountains. There's talk of a vein of ki, like spiritual energy, connecting it to the city nearby.
Ki, near a demon cave.
Right. And there are steep cliffs adorned with green vines, high cliffs hanging with purple balhenia. Deep woods filled with birdsong, flowers at the entrance. It sounds like a paradise.
That's really jarring. Did the text acknowledge how weird that is?
It does. It explicitly compares it, saying it's not inferior to Peach Blossom Spring, which is this famous legendary utopia, and that it's suitable for avoiding worldly affairs. It's like describing a hidden retreat, not a den of thieves.
Wow.
Sun Wukong, Zubaji, and Sha Wujing, you know them, They're approaching this place, the Tiger Cave. Sounds bad already. And they're not just strolling up. No, they're disguised. And they're herding pigs and sheep, like regular delivery guys.
Right, which immediately makes you ask why. Why this whole complicated setup? These guys are incredibly powerful. What's to tell you about the Demon King, the Yellow Lion, that they feel they need to trick him like this?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, notice Baji's little hey, hey sound as he's driving the animals. It's not just random. It's like a signal meant to draw out the guards, the smaller demons.
Yeah, it works. So the scene shifts, and now they're talking at the cave entrance, still in disguise, playing the part. They say, okay, we brought 8 pigs and 7 sheep, totaling 15 animals, standard delivery. But then they throw in this curveball. They bring up an old debt, supposedly, and say their guest, who is actually Xia Wujing in disguise, needs to collect some silver.
And this tells you something interesting about the Demon King, doesn't it? He gets caught up in this mundane stuff, transactions. It kind of makes him weirdly relatable, even though he's this big monster. The heroes are definitely playing on that. But then things get tense when the guest says he wants to see the Grand Assembly. Oh, that makes the Demon King suspicious. And he slips up. He mentions his treasure came from the city. That's a huge piece of intel they just picked up, almost by accident.
Exactly. And even though the Demon King is clearly getting angry, worried his secret's out, our heroes just, well, they push it. Sun Wukong does this great bit, still playing the humble delivery guy, saying, oh, our guest is just from Qianfangji, way out of town. He's just hungry. It's brilliant misdirection, right? And guess what? It works. He lets them in. Okay, but here's where it gets really good. They're inside now, and imagine seeing this. Right there, on a central table, plain as day, a 9-toothed pig rake, polished shine, Zhu Baji's weapon, and next to it, a golden cudgel Sun Wukong's, and the demon-subduing staff Xia Wujing's. The Demon King, totally clueless, even warns them not to mention seeing these things outside. The nerve.
I mean, talk about hubris, right? Why? Why keep your enemy's most famous, powerful weapons out on display like trophies? It's almost like he just has to show off what he stole. Which, of course, is his big mistake, and leads straight to his downfall. Yeah. And you can just feel Baji's reaction. The text says he's a coarse and blunt man. He doesn't hesitate. He just rushed up and took it down. Disguise gone, instantly attacking. It's pure character. That moment changes everything.
And it's just chaos. An epic fight erupts. All three drop their disguises, grab their weapons. Back in business. The description is amazing. Wukong's staff is like wind. Baji's rake comes down like rain. Xia Wujing's staff creates a full sky glow. Just pure energy. Even the Demon King puts up a fight. His four-bright shovel creates cloudy brocade. He's powerful, no doubt. The whole thing is compared to three immortals refining great pills. That paints a picture, doesn't it? Fiery, light-shaking gods and ghosts.
That comparison, the three immortals refining great pills, it's really potent. It's not just random violence. It emphasizes this, like, overwhelming transformative energy they create together. They become this single alchemical force, almost. A force of nature cleaning house.
Yeah. And the Yellow Lion Demon, he just can't handle it. Not against the three of them, united with their proper weapons. He gets overwhelmed fast, and he bolts, flees towards the Southeast Sun Palace, just parried off by the wind. And here's Sun Wukong again, thinking strategically. He doesn't immediately give chase. He says, do not chase a desperate foe. We will only cut off his return route. Smart.
That's absolutely critical wisdom there. It's not just about winning the fight that's happening right now. It's about the bigger picture, securing the win long term, stopping future trouble. It shows a really deep understanding of, well, warfare, essentially. Sometimes letting the enemy run actually helps you predict where they'll go next, and a cornered enemy, they can be unpredictable.
So with the big boss gone, they clean house systematically. They take out all the lesser demons in the cave. And get this, it turns out these lesser demons are actually just like transformed animals. Tigers, wolves, leopards, horses, deer, goats. They gather up all the loot, the fine and soft items the demon had piled up. And then they burn the whole lair down. Total destruction.
And that burning is important. It's not just symbolic. It means he has absolutely nowhere to come back to. No base. It's a comprehensive victory. No loose ends left dangling. Denies him any ground.
Meanwhile, the old king and Tang Monk are just waiting, probably chewing their nails off. And then our heroes show up, victorious. And they literally just dump this huge pile of dead demon animals and stolen stuff right in the courtyard, quite the entrance. The king's thrilled, obviously, but he's also worried. What about revenge? This Yellow Lion guy is probably not going to just let it go. But this is where Sun Wukong pulls out another rabbit from his hat. Remember how he's always gathering intel? Turns out, amidst all that fighting and chaos back in the cave, he managed to grab something, an invitation letter.
That letter.
And the letter tells them everything. It's signed by your servant's son, Yellow Lion. Bit ironic, that name. And it's addressed to Grandfather Nine-Headed Lion Sr. An invitation. Wukong knows exactly where the Yellow Lion ran for backup, who he's running to, and basically when the counterattack is planned. He tells the king, don't worry, this threat, it'll be swept clean. He's got it covered.
The running demon. And rewind. How did our proud Yellow Lion spirit end up in such a mess?
It all starts, really, with him getting to his grandpa's place, the Nine-Curved Cave. That's where the Nine-Headed Lion lives. He bursts in pretty upset, even crying, apparently.
Trying. Wow. And his grandfather, the Nine-Headed Lion, he must have been confused, right? Wasn't Yellow Lion Spirit supposed to be throwing some big celebration?
Exactly. He was expecting a party invitation, not his grandson showing up in tears. And that's when the story spills out. Yellow Lion Spirit, still sniffling, tells him what happened. The night before, he was just, you know, taking a walk, enjoying the moonlight.
As demons do.
As demons do. And he spots this incredible glow coming from the king's palace, blindingly bright. So curiosity. He finds these three amazing weapons just sitting there. A nine-toothed drake, a jewel staff, and the big one, a golden-banded cudgel. And just uses his magic to, well, snatch right out of the palace.
He was so pleased with himself, wasn't he? Decided to throw a whole banquet.
Oh, yeah, the rake banquet, he called it. Sent his minions out to buy pigs and sheep and fruit, the works. Planned to invite Grandpa Nine-Headed Lion over to show off his loops.
But then things started to get a little shaky.
Just a little at first. His minions, these guys called Diazwaner and Guguai, they come back from shopping, but they've got someone with them, some vendor who sold them stuff, and this guy is insisting, absolutely insisting, on seeing the feast.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Sees the weapons and immediately says, hey, those are mine. And then everything just kicks off. The source describes this sudden, wild transformation. They just drop the act.
Who were they?
Sun Wukong, Zhu Bajie, Sha Wujing. And they're not happy. The description paints them as suddenly becoming these incredibly formidable figures. They just unleash on Yellow Lion Spirit.
And he had his own weapon, right? The four bright shovel.
He did, but it was no match. They just overwhelmed him. His fancy rake banquet turned into, well, a rout. Total chaos. He barely escaped with his life, which brings us back to him running terrified through the night.
Wow. How does Grandpa Nine-Headed Lion take this news? The fact that his grandson picked the fight with Sun Wukong.
Well, it's interesting. He hears the description, furry face, thundermouth, etc., and he doesn't panic. He actually gives a little laugh. He knows exactly who they are.
He recognized the description immediately.
Instantly. Shows how much he knows about the big players, right? He then lays it all out for his grandson, explains just who Sun Wukong is.
Oh, I bet that was a fun conversation.
Remember that guy, he basically says, who caused chaos in heaven like 500 years ago? The 100,000 heavenly soldiers couldn't catch?
Yeah, that guy.
That troublemaker, he calls him. The one who's an expert at, and I quote, finding people, searching mountains, overturning seas, breaking through caves, and attacking cities.
Okay, so maybe stealing from him wasn't the smartest plan. What was Yellow Lion Spirit thinking? Or did he just not know? Was he that clueless?
It really seems like pure ignorant arrogance, doesn't it? He saw something shiny, assumed it was powerful, assumed he could take it, and had absolutely no idea whose toes he was stepping on, just completely misjudged the situation.
But knowing all this, knowing it's Sun Wukong, what does the Nine-Headed Lion decide to do? Does he tell his grandson to just cut his losses?
You'd think so, maybe. But no. Family loyalty, maybe pride, kicks in. He decides they need revenge. He's not just going after the monks now. He's going to capture the Yuhua King, too. He wants to escalate.
Wow. Okay, so he's doubling down.
Totally. And he calls in reinforcements, summons his other grandsons, Crouching Lion, Snow Lion, Suani, Baize, Fuli, Tuan Shang. Sounds like quite the demonic crew. All armed, all ready for a proper fight.
So this small incident is about to become a full-blown war.
Pretty much. And it gets worse for Yellow Lion Spirit first. The whole gang heads back toward his place, Leopard Head Mountain. But as they get close...
Let me guess. More bad news.
Oh, yeah. They smell smoke. They hear crying. It's those two minions again, Diazwaner and Guguai, and they're completely falling apart.
What happened to them?
They apparently ran into Sun Wukong. He just... the text says he spat on them.
Spat on them?
Yeah. And whatever was in that spit, it paralyzed them. They couldn't move, couldn't speak, just stuck there while Wukong casually took their silver and went on his way.
And humiliating.
Right. And by the time they can move again and get back to their master's cave,
he was gone.
burned to the ground, ashes, smoke still rising, everything gone, the master's treasures, his subordinates, his home, just devastation.
Oh, man. Poor Yellow Lion Spirit. I mean, he brought it on himself, but still.
He completely loses it. Just collapses, weeping about his destroyed home, his lost followers, everything. He's so upset he actually tries to bash his own head against a rock.
Whoa.
Yeah, the nine-headed lion has to physically stop him, pulls him back, tells him, you know, getting angry isn't going to help, save that energy. They need it for revenge.
So grief turns to grim determination, a need for payback.
Exactly. And that sets the stage for the next confrontation, the big one. The demon army approaches.
And the description of their approach sounds intense.
Oh, it's terrifying. The source says wind rolling, mist surging, sand flying, stones rolling, fog everywhere. Pure chaos and fear heading straight for the city walls.
How do the people react?
Panic. Absolute panic. People outside the city are grabbing their kids, dropping their stuff, just scrambling to get inside the gates before they slam shut.
And the news reaches the palace.
Yep. Right when the Yuhua King and Tang Monk are having breakfast, of all things. They're startled, obviously.
But Sun Wukong, I bet he's calm.
Cool as a cucumber. He reassures everyone. Ah! He basically says that'll be the demons from Tighter Mouth Cave. Looks like they brought Grandpa. He knew this might happen.
So he takes charge.
Immediately tells the king, close all the gates, get soldiers on the walls. The prince and the king get everyone organized, flags flying, cannons booming. They're preparing for a siege.
And the pilgrims. Wukong, Baji, Wujing.
They don't wait behind the walls. They take to the air, described as half in cloud, half in mist, ready to meet the enemy head on outside the city.
It really sets up an epic clash. And there's that line from the source that just sums it all up, isn't there?
There is. It says, losing the wise weapon due to carelessness suddenly causes demons to rise and all evil to rage.
It's perfect. Carelessness, that's the spark. Not malice initially, just stupidity, really.
Yeah.
Hubris.
A poignant summary. It wasn't just losing the weapon. It was how it was lost, thoughtlessly, arrogantly.
Exactly. That ripple effect is just huge.